Have you ever thought that some of the movies you've watched reminded you of events that happened in your own life? Sharon Dolan certainly has. She's a poet and an essayist. Sharon's the author of 6 poetry collections, and she's also written Hitchcock Blonde, a cinematic memoir. The book explores her life through the lens of 10 of Alfred Hitchcock's films. Here's Sharon reading an excerpt.
Summertime in the Catskills with my family at one of the Borscht Belt hotels. I think it must have been the Pines. I am quite young, no more than 4 or 5, alone in the day camp arts and crafts hut. How can this have happened? I am looping a potholder onto its frame, so intent on weaving together the red, blue, and yellow bands that I do not notice at first when my mother comes in to retrieve me. Instead of taking me back to the hotel where my father and sister are waiting to meet us, Mommy pulls me by the hand and we run into the woods in back of the hotel property. Farther and farther we fly, through the woods, past the occasional house. Where is she taking me? It may seem strange to write that my mother used to kidnap me, but that is what it felt like.
Why did you want to explore your life through the lens of Alfred Hitchcock's films?
I will say, like any writer, I didn't choose Alfred Hitchcock. Alfred Hitchcock chose me. I did not think I was going to write a memoir. And then I was actually ill with the flu. We all know about being feverish, especially in these COVID days. And I was running about 103, 104 fever. And I thought I would watch Vertigo.
Give me your hand.
And I was just coming down off of a very destructive affair. And I was watching a movie and I thought to myself, Eureka, this could work. This is so connected to what I was going through in this relationship. So it's really about destructive heterosexual desire. And I thought, I could possibly write a memoir through the lens of Hitchcock. And I took a number of months in order to figure out that I could do it. Pasteur says, chance favors the prepared mind. And so my mind in its feverish haze was prepared.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The dictionary defines Hitchcockian as, quote, resembling the style of Sir Alfred Hitchcock, especially through the use of tension and suspense, end quote. So would it be fair to say that your life has contained a lot of tension and suspense?
Yes. I would say very little has turned out the way I would have predicted from the time I was a small child. Again, I trusted my mother. I loved my mother. And yet she did things that were frightening, like running away with me. Or when she would have a breakdown, she seemed to become another person. Or when she had disappearances, I didn't understand them entirely. When she went into the hospital or when she came back and she was so drugged up, I didn't really recognize her. So I would say from the get-go, everything in my life seemed to be unpredictable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, your mother had schizophrenia and your father was a traveling salesman. So can you talk a bit about what your relationships were like with your parents?
I loved them. They loved me. They adored me. And so I think it's very important in this book to understand that you can have a parent who's severely mentally ill, and yet I got the most important thing from her I could get, which was her really unconditional love, even though it was at times very frightening. And the same, I think, was true of my father, whom I had to depend on, even though there was something rather childish about him and also unreliable. And he would go on these road trips for a month or more at a time, and we would be left with my mother, and who knows what would happen with her when he was away. And that is eventually why he put her on medication or had her put on medication permanently.
Yeah. What was the first Hitchcock film you saw that really connected with your personal life?
I think as a child, the one that I remember watching and my favorite one is Rear Window. And again, as I was putting together this book, I thought to myself, Rear Window. Here he is, the voyeur, looking in other people's lives. And when I was growing up in Brooklyn, we had windows. We lived on the first floor of a rental, and people could look in our windows. So I very much had that experience of other people spying on me. I could read that very brief section that happened,
yeah,
which was really quite frightening at the time.
Yeah, please do. Thank you.
This happens in Brooklyn. I lived in East Flatbush. And I was a teenager at the time. I was in high school. Let's say I was about 16. I'm reclining on my bed, one leg bent akimbo over the other, chatting away with a friend when I hear a rapping on the side door to our apartment. Our dog Macduff, a Bedlington Terrier, starts barking, and I come out of my bedroom to stand at one end of the kitchen. It is rare for us to have an evening visitor. Our next-door neighbor, who has the strange mother with the bottom of her face missing, is standing at the entrance to our kitchen with a red-headed teenage boy about my age in front of him. I see that the boy is shaking. I caught this boy peeping in your back window. What do you want me to do with him? As I move closer to the doorway, I see that our neighbor, wearing a red plaid hunting jacket, has the barrel of a shotgun prodding the boy's back. I have never seen a shotgun before. I stand there transfixed. The boy, tall and freckled, looks into my father's face, trembling, silently pleading for his life. Shoot him, my dad says. No, please, the boy cries out. Get lost, my neighbor says as he lowers the gun. And if I ever see you around here again, I won't hesitate to use this. The boy gives him a quick nod and runs off. And I realized that the boy had been looking in my window while I was talking on the phone. I had this issue a lot of my life of feeling that there were people who were looking in on me. And of course, the quandary of writing this book was I was allowing people to look in on my life, and I was having to deal with what that meant.
Mm-hmm. And there's that famous scene in Rear Window in which James Stewart's character, L.B. Jeffries, asks Grace Kelly's character, Lisa Fremont, if she thinks it's ethical for him to stare at his neighbor through his camera, even if he proves that he didn't see his neighbor commit a crime. And Lisa replies,
I'm not much on Rear Window ethics.
Of course, they can do the same thing to me, watch me like a bug under a glass if they want to.
Jeff, you know, if someone came in here, they wouldn't believe what they'd see.
What?
You and me with long faces, plunged into despair because we find out a man didn't kill his wife. We're two of the most frightening ghouls I've ever known.
How did you wrestle with this ethical issue while writing your memoir?
It's a disturbing one. I've always felt that to be a writer, you have to be somewhat ruthless. Believe it or not, I learned this from the most misogynist of artists, from Picasso. And that doesn't mean there weren't things I left out of the memoir to protect certain people. But for the most part, I felt I had to tell my story. I did feel there was the ethical quandary of having to reveal certain things about my dad that I had only found out at the end of his life. And I was very troubled by having to reveal the fact that he had had affairs. That was something I didn't know for my whole life while he was alive, really not until the very end of his life. But I think in order to write this memoir, I had to decide that it was more important for me to speak my truth, whatever that truth is. And again, it's going to be different for somebody else. My sister has called me up and said, oh no, that's not how I remember it happening. So everybody has a different version of the past.
Mm-hmm. The whole Rashomon thing. Yeah, truth is in the eye of the beholder. Yeah. Hitchcock sexually harassed many of the leading ladies in his films, especially Tippi Hedren, who starred in The Birds. She has said that Hitchcock's behavior ruined her career. I'm curious about how this affects, this bad behavior by Hitchcock, how it affects the way you view him and his films, especially in terms of the ways that the films relate to your own life.
I very early on have made a distinction between the biographical figure of the artist and their work. What interested me was that he really was the most abusive and stepped over the line with Tippi Hedren. I think it was partially a class issue because she was very working class. He wouldn't dare to do that, I don't believe, with Ingrid Bergman or Grace Kelly, but he felt he could get away with it with Tippi Hedren. And I think it affected The Birds. I think in that final scene where she goes upstairs and is attacked, she's almost blinded by The Birds. And I think that he was getting out his sexual rage at her for refusing him in the movie itself. And it's very disturbing to see that.
Melanie!
And of course, this is the one movie where I was actually sexually assaulted myself while watching the movie for the first time.
Ooh, yeah. You have a chapter about, well, my favorite Hitchcock film and also my all-time favorite film, Vertigo. It's called What Do Men and Women Want? What is the connection between Vertigo and the time in your life that you associate with it?
It's up until the present. It is the various relationships that I had in which it seemed that the men wanted to control me or make me over into some cipher of their own desire. And I wanted to be desired and would do so at any cost. And I think that's really what happens in Vertigo. It goes to an extreme, of course. But I think that my own relationships seem to rhyme with the ones that are in Vertigo. And I was sort of shocked when I first was aware of that. For instance, I was in a relationship with somebody who had been involved with another poet who had committed suicide. And then this man sent me a short poem by text that seemed as though it was addressed to me, but it was actually addressed to her. So he was in love with the dead woman and was really conflating me with her. How close to Vertigo can you get?
Not any closer, I don't think. How is writing this book, this cinematic memoir, how has it changed your life?
As I say somewhere in here, it means I have had to learn, or I am continuing to have to learn, how to live life with the shades up, which is not to say that I'm an exhibitionist. I don't feel that way. But I have had to accept that people are going to know intimate details about my life that they did not know. Even though I have been writing poems, some of which you could say were confessional, there is always the scrim of metaphor and the language in poetry. Of course, I use Hitchcock in a similar way, and you could say I use him as a shield and also as a lens through which to view my life. I will also say that I probably have tampered with my memories or altered them for good. Once you retrieve a memory, and you see it in terms of something else, it's very hard to unsee it that way. So I think now it's very hard for me to remember these incidents from my past without thinking of Hitchcock and the movies associated with them. So I've sort of permanently altered these memories. I could not have done it with another director. Absolutely not. I do think that I see my life differently. And I did come to some realizations that I would not have had I not written this memoir.
For example?
I would say, for instance, in this Bellbound chapter, when I was in love with someone who was very addicted to cocaine, I deal with this issue of addiction in here, and he hid it from me and everybody, and he would have these psychotic breaks. I don't think I understood when I was going through it that what drew me to him was that the psychotic breaks when he was on cocaine or in withdrawal from it were very similar to the kinds of breaks that my mother would have. And that even though it was terrifying to me, he would threaten to let me out of the side of the road in the middle of the night. I guess there was something comforting and familiar about it. And as I write in that chapter, it was a way to keep my mother alive because she died shortly after he and I began seeing each other. So perhaps seeing him and staying with him, despite his being dangerous for me, I realized this pattern that I had not realized before I began writing the book.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned a moment ago that one of the ways your life has changed by writing your book was that you've permanently altered some memories. I'm curious about how you feel about that emotionally. Are you sad that you've permanently altered them? Does it matter to you?
Actually, I'm very happy about it because I write at the very end, I talk about trying to create something beautiful. And I feel if that is what I've been able to do with this pain, that's what all artists want to do. It's what Dante talks about, the refining fire of poetry and of prose. I've tried with my art to create something beautiful out of all of this pain. And I hope that's what I've achieved. So actually, to the extent that this project is a success, I'm pleased that I was able to transform all of this pain with the help of Hitchcock into something that has a beauty to it.
Mm-hmm. I think it does. It certainly did for me. Sharon Dolan, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Sharon Dolan is a poet and the author of Hitchcock Blonde, a cinematic memoir. You can find out more about Sharon at wpr.org/beta.
We're definitely trying to fight for, number one, just existence, because so many people don't understand that American Indians still exist.
Novelist Stephen Graham Jones talks about his novel, The Only Good Indians. That's coming up in just a moment. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.